31. No, retiring into private life was not an option. However far one retreated, everywhere one was confronted with the very thing one had been fleeing from. I discovered that the Nazi Revolution had abolished the old distinction between politics and private life, and that it was quite impossible to treat it merely as a political event. It took place not only in the sphere of politics, but also in each individual private life. It seeped through the walls like a poison gas. If you wanted to evade the gas, there was only one option, to remove yourself physically. Emigration. Emigration. That meant saying goodbye to the country of one's birth, language, and education, and severing all patriotic ties. In that summer of 1933, I was prepared to take even this final step. I had become accustomed to leave-taking all around. I had lost my friends, had seen harmless acquaintances changed into virtual murderers or enemies, threatening to deliver me to the Gestapo. I had seen all my small daily pleasures vanish. Solidly based institutions, such as the Prussian justice system, had caved in before my eyes. The world of books and discussion groups had dissolved. Opinions, points of view, theoretical systems had had to be abandoned as never before. Where were the career plans and ideas I had so confidently entertained just a few months before? The adventure had begun. Already the basic tenor of my life had changed. The pain of leave-taking was followed by numbness and exhilaration. I no longer felt firm ground beneath my feet, but rather seemed to float or swim in empty space, strangely light and free as a bird. Partings no longer caused much pain, just a feeling of "let it go," and "well then, you can dispense with that, too." And I felt myself becoming ever poorer, but also ever lighter. Even so, this final parting, mentally taking leave of my own country, was difficult, strenuous, and painful. It advanced by fits and starts, with many relapses. Sometimes I felt I would not have the strength to go through with it. Once again, in telling my story, I am not recounting just my own unimportant experience, but what thousands of others also went through. True, in March and April, as I had witnessed the nation leap into the quagmire to the accompaniment of patriotic jubilation and shouts of triumph, I had angrily declared that I would emigrate and have nothing more to do with this country. I would rather run a tobacconist's shop in Chicago than be a German Secretary of State, and so on. But these had just been outbursts. There was not much thought and little serious reality behind them. Now, in the chilly, airless coolness of these months of parting, it was quite a different matter to consider leaving my country in earnest. To be sure, I was not a German nationalist. The nationalism of the sports clubs that had been the dominant feeling of the years following the Great War, and is now the spiritual basis of Nazism, the childish delight of seeing one's own country represented by ever larger blobs of colour on the map, the feeling of triumph over victories, and the pleasure in seeing people humiliated and subjugated, the relish of the fear aroused in others, the bombastic national self-praise in the style of the Meistersingers, the hysteria about German thought, German feeling, German constancy, German manhood, being German. All of that had long been abhorrent and repugnant to me. It was no sacrifice to forego it. However, that did not prevent me from being a fairly good German, and I was conscious of it often enough, if only for the shame I felt at the excesses of German nationalism. Like most members of any nation, I felt proud of the better points that one sees here and there in German history and the German character, offended by the insults in word or deed sometimes aimed at Germany by the nationalists of other countries, gratified when Germany was unexpectedly praised, and ashamed when compatriots of mine, or worse still, my whole country, behaved badly. In a nutshell, I belonged to my country as one belongs to one's family. More critical than outsiders, not always on the best of terms with all its members, certainly not prepared to make it the centre of my life with a cry of "my family first and foremost," but belonging to it after all, and making no secret of it. To give up this sense of belonging, to turn away and learn to look on one's home country as an enemy, is no small matter. I do not love Germany, just as I do not love myself. If there is a country that I do love, it is France, but I could love any country more easily than my own, even without the Nazis. However, one's own country plays a different and far more indispensable role than that of a mistress. It is just one's own country. If one loses it, one almost loses the right to love any other country. One loses the prerequisites for the delightful game of international hospitality, for exchange, mutual invitations, getting to know one another, showing off to each other. One becomes, well, stateless, a man without a shadow, without a background, at best tolerated somewhere, or if voluntarily or involuntarily one fails to follow inner emigration with the real thing, utterly homeless, an exile in one's own country. To undergo this operation, the internal detachment of oneself from one's country of one's own free will is an act of biblical savagery. If your eye offend you, tear it out. Many who came as close as I did balked at this step, and have since stumbled along spiritually and morally lamed, shuddering at the crimes committed in their names, unable openly to deny responsibility for them, caught in a net of apparently insoluble conflicts. Do they not owe it to their country to sacrifice their greater wisdom, their morals, their human dignity, and their conscience? Does not what they call the incredible rise of Germany show that the sacrifice is worth it, and that it all adds up? They forget that it is no better for a nation than for a single man to gain the whole world if it loses its soul. And they also forget that they are sacrificing not just themselves for their patriotism, or what they think is patriotism, but also their country. For, and this is what made the parting finally almost inevitable, Germany did not remain Germany. The German nationalists themselves destroyed it. It gradually became clear that the conflict was only superficially about the question of whether it was necessary to leave one's country in order to keep faith with oneself. The real conflict beneath the surface, hidden by the common clichés and platitudes, was between nationalism and keeping faith with one's country.